Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shane Attack.
Shane Attack is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated specializes in customer service, low prices, and prompt shipping. You can find our web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I do not believe that Too Many Bones actually has too many bones.
I don't understand what that means.
I mean, in this example, aren't bones dice?
Technically, bones in Too Many Bones are a single side or two sides on the dice. There are actually pictures of bones on the dice. Maybe it's a double entendre? I don't know. I mean, you're rolling bones and not looking for bones.
It seems pretty entendrific to me.
Except for the bones do things for you. But we can talk about that after you guys tell me who you are.
I'm Jay, and to my knowledge, I do not have too many bones.
And I'm Josh, and according to my Hobbit clock, it is time for 11sies.
did you actually get a Hobbit clock?
You have a Hobbit clock?
I have a wood carved, I don't know what the technique is, wood burned? Like, I have a wooden clock that has a picture of Bag End in the center of it, and the times around the edge are second breakfast, 11sies, luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner, supper, and then breakfast.
This thing is amazing. I all of a sudden need one.
I'll send a picture to the Discord chat later.
We got too many bones. I purchased Too Many Bones for myself for Christmas, and it is one of those games where I just do not know what to think. It literally has the highest production value of any board game I have ever purchased.
Now I'm wanting to Google this and see what exactly is going on here.
To be fair, it's
kind of a fascinating puzzle, the whole thing.
Yeah, the thing that blows me away about...
Is it a cool mini or not game?
No, it's a crud. Okay. You actually recommended it years ago. I can't remember who the publisher is.
Chip Theory Games is the
Chip
publisher.
Theory. That's okay. Right. And like all their games use poker chips pretty extensively.
Let me just say that this game's production value is so high that you begin wondering why. Like, there are things in the game you're like, couldn't they have done this easier or simpler or cheaper? I mean, all the cards are plastic. The rules are of the highest quality paper that I've ever seen on rules.
Dunder Mifflin would be proud.
All of the characters are on neoprene mats. All of the dice are super high quality dice. The chips that represent the characters are like this really high glossy full color print, almost holographic looking image on the chip. I mean, it is really, it's almost like they called the printer and said, we just want max of everything. Can you dial it up beyond what you've ever done before?
Interesting.
And I honestly don't know if that's praise or condemnation. So take it for what it's worth.
Damning with confused praise.
I guess my only Games Workshop update is, I guess, two things. One, the long story of the Dire Chasm box set is supposedly going to come to an end tomorrow. And I guess we'll see on that. But
I love your continued optimism. It's one of my favorite things about you.
Yes.
I'm actually a little shocked that you're saying it's not come to an end at this point. I mean, there's the listeners don't realize this, but there's been a week and a half or 2 week gap since our last recording.
Yeah, well, it takes a while for things to get through their queue, I guess. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, there's that. The other thing that's kind of funny about it is that since last Friday until the end of the year, they're not accepting new orders and they're just catching up on back orders. And so, like, start of the year, they're just going to be like swamped by these gigantic restock orders.
By pent up reorders.
Yeah. So, there's no winning, but, stuff coming out. One thing to check out on is the Wintertime Wasteland Kickstarter items are now in stock at Discount Games Inc. I've had a lot of people ask what's the difference between the Kickstarter items and the normal items, and the answer is literally that the Kickstarter items are now in stock, and the other items will be in stock in like February. So
the answer is like the delivery method is the difference?
The release date and the Kickstarter items on our price are still discounted, but not discounted as much as the other items. Mm. So that's that. And then, as always, check out Muzon Minis and get your awesome Muzon Minis stuff from them. Did any of you have anything that you wanted to say from Christmas?
It was great. I now no longer get to play Hades anymore because my children have retaken over the Switch. It's sort of like a area control game, and currently I have no control.
I'm actually going to make that same sad admission, funnily enough. Which the funny thing is part of the reason why is that one of the gifts that my 8-year-old received was a pretty nice case for the Switch, you know, that like holds all the controllers and all the cartridges and yada yada. And so now he like actually keeps it in the case and takes nice care of it. But that also means that it's not hidden in my little Hades playing corner in the back room anymore.
See, I knew better. My child asked for that for Christmas, but he did not get that.
It's a total double-edged sword because now I'm glad it's being well taken care of.
Well, if I gave him that, I know that it would actually, like, it doesn't normally leave the house. I think that if I gave him the case, it would leave the house, and then
I'd be more
concerned about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's little cubes in the Switch area, and my cube has been pushed out by my three children's cubes.
Amazing.
What is your first world problem, Josh?
Oh, my first world Christmas problem is I did, of course, get some games on the Oculus Quest 2, one of which was Vader Immortal, and I started in on it, and I found some of the storyline to be interesting.
Are you playing Vader, I assume?
No, you're not Vader. You actually are on, oh crud, Mustafar. So you're like in Vader's, what do you want to call it, lair?
Volcano palace?
Yes, base thingy, yeah. But I have discovered that like, I really haven't used the Quest for an extended period of time until I started Vader Immortal. And like, at an hour, my head feels like it wants to explode.
Oh, interesting.
Because I have a giant head, not because like,
right,
I cannot get the straps like loose enough or whatever to like, so I think there might be a different strap mechanism or something that I got to look into.
There are a lot of aftermarket style accessories for these things. One of the Rift issues is that the hand controllers are not that comfortable, and there are multiple companies who sell like grips that go on them to make them more comfortable for extended use.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if there's anything like that for the Quest, but I would assume that you could look around. I mean, it's a little bit newer, so the chances might be a little less likely, but I can see that that's part of the problem. One of the things that is an issue with the Rift is that there's very little actual physical eye adjustment. It's all done digitally, which means that if you don't fall within normal ranges, I mean, same sort of thing for, you know, size of head. If you don't fall within normal ranges on these things, you might struggle.
I might spend my afternoon watching YouTube review videos of Oculus Quest 2 straps or something.
But how did you feel about the game itself?
Of the three games I've really played on the Quest 2 now, it's probably my least favorite. It's still like some cool Star Wars content, but like for me at least, it ended up feeling like the most glitchy of the games, you know. And like Beat Saber's pretty straightforward. What's the other one I played with the freezing bullets thing? Super Hot is like a really interesting puzzle, and of course the way they've done their graphics, it can't get glitchy. But like Invader Immortal, it's like at one point in time, it turns out that the greatest challenge for the character in this game is to climb a ladder.
This sounds like a Cyberpunk 2077 story.
Well, a little bit, right? Like, I fell off this ladder like 1,000 freaking times, and finally I'm like, okay, if I step back just right from the ladder and like, and by the end of it, it ended up being like a fantastic safety training video, I guess, because I'm like, two hands on the ladder before we move up to the next rung with only one hand, then two hands again, you know, I'm like, I'm climbing it like a complete Nimrod by the end of it. So I didn't love that. Like, I loved I thought the storyline was interesting. The atmosphere was cool. You know, you got to do some cool stuff. But it just, for me, was the most glitchy of any of the VR games I've done yet. But the Quest 2 has been like a huge hit at my house, just not for me. Like, there's probably like a half a dozen people now that have played a ton of Beat Saber on it, a little bit of Super Hot. Even my wife liked Beat Saber, which is not necessarily surprising since she's kind of into music. And anyway, so that's my first world problem.
So you're saying on the Quest, the cubes that are in there, you only have one left? Just
yeah, basically.
Okay, well, we're gonna talk about a lot of stuff this episode, but the first one that I wanted to hit on was, so I've been pretty vocal with you guys in saying that I think that HBO Max is a pretty good value, and I still think that's the case. But one of the things that they did was release Wonder Woman 1984, and they're doing a year of movies that are going direct to HBO Max the same time as they're going in the theaters. And so there's some people who, like, this was, they're hoping this was going to be the thing that pushed them over. And while I maintain that HBO Max is still a good value, Wonder Woman 1984 is not.
This was really kind of like their first salvo in what I would call like the war against Disney Plus, because Disney Plus is going to start doing all this crap too, aren't they?
I mean, by crap, I mean just releasing
a ton of stuff here in the company.
They're going to be releasing a ton of stuff. They're not doing like much of the direct to their streaming service.
Soul came out the exact same day, basically the exact same time. And Soul is, while it's not the best Pixar film ever made, and I haven't seen Wonder Woman 1984, but from the reviews, it seems pretty simple to say that Soul is the better movie.
I'm excited to watch Soul. Yeah. I'm curious, Trevor, would you say that Soul is an average or above average Pixar movie?
It felt kind of average to me.
Okay.
I feel like some of the humor beats sort of missed, and the story is a little, I don't know. Well, I mean, it is maybe designed from the ground up to tug at your heartstrings, and it didn't necessarily tug at mine. here's the thing. I feel like I don't want to get spoilers, because certainly people listening have not seen it, and one of our hosts has not seen it. But I feel like there was an opportunity at the end of the show to make something very meaningful happen that would make you probably choke up, and a lot of people be upset, and it didn't happen. They sort of went, oh, well, we're just going to skip over that. And I don't know, I guess that's certainly a choice you can make as a creator, but I felt like it was a poor choice. So
I think we're going to talk more about this movie in a later episode.
Right.
But I guess my quick review on it is that I guess I don't really have a strong opinion on if it's an average or above average Pixar movie, but that's a pretty high quality level either way.
Don't get me wrong.
Right.
Like when I say that it is an average Pixar film, that is not like, that's not condemnation. It is good film. I enjoyed it.
That would be like saying Arrival is an average Denis Villeneuve film.
Right? Yes, thank you, Josh. I want to get off my chest a few rants about Wonder Woman 1984.
Okay.
So first off,
Can we set this up just a moment? You don't particularly care for the first one in the series. Am I remembering that right?
I mean, I don't. I think it's fine. I don't think that it's as amazing as like it seems like the rest of the world does.
I thought it was pretty amazing. I watched it multiple times. Like
I've watched it multiple times too. That's not a high bar, I guess.
Right when right when it came out. I mean, we watched it multiple times in a row right when it came out. Like right when I had access to it.
So, I mean, I did have the folly of somewhat high hopes, because I'd hoped that I would at least like it as much as the other Wonder Woman movie, which again, isn't as much as most other people, but I did still think it was a good movie, and it just falls way short of that, in my opinion.
Wait, did I hear that right? So you liked it close to as much as the first one?
No.
Okay.
I said it falls way short of being as good as the first movie.
DC movie scale, is it? I mean, since we're moving from the Pixar movie scale to the DC movie scale.
Okay, so it's not Suicide. It's not Suicide Squad.
Okay,
wait,
but it does have.
Is it better or worse than Aquaman?
Probably about the same.
Oh, that hurt.
I mean, granted, part of what's funny about it is... I haven't
even watched Aquaman. I feel like such a loser.
Don't.
I mean, part of what's kind of crazy about it...
Aquaman would be is if you know... I mean, if you like Aquaman, maybe you'd like it, I guess. But.
Yeah. Or if you like Jason Momoa.
I like Jason Momoa, though, so...
Let me just say, between... Namor and Aquaman, like, generally I have to go check and remember which one's DC and which one's Marvel. I care about both of them, like, not even a single iota. Woo, okay. You talk to fish, you control water, woo! So great.
So, one of the things that is kind of funny about this show is that I feel like the actors actually did a pretty good job, like Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. Pedro Pascal. It's sort of funny. I thought this, and someone else mentioned this. Pedro Pascal actually, it kind of feels like he is playing a character that is Nathan Fillion.
Whoa!
And
hold on.
He looks and acts quite a bit like him, which I thought was kind of funny.
Deeply interested. Now, are we talking Nathan Fillion Castle? Or are we talking Nathan Fillion Firefly? Are we talking Nathan Fillion?
Wait, Josh. What's the difference between those two?
How dare you, you son of a gun.
I like Nathan Fillion. I'm just saying.
I'm just trying to gauge the way in which my man crush will operate. That's all.
Well, I don't know. So I feel like the actors actually did a pretty good job with the material they were given. They were just giving awful material.
Heard that some of it felt like plot holes. Do you feel like this was an editing problem that maybe, or a script problem?
I don't know. Like, let me give you a couple examples of things that just like really bothered me probably more than they should, but maybe not. I don't know. So like, there's some of the things like it felt like they were just having Wonder Woman jump the shark left and right. And she it felt like she would have superpowers that you had no idea that she had. And the thing that makes it kind of especially weird is that, you know, this is kind of a prequel movie. And so she has these superpowers here in this prequel movie, but she evidently forgets all those powers in the later movies that we've already watched because she doesn't use them in those.
Dude, I'm dying. And just will you tell me what one of these powers of these examples?
So, for example, here's an example of like there were just points in the movie that it made my eyes roll because it was so dumb. But she uses her lasso to lasso onto Lightning to basically do a Spider-Man swing through the sky.
Amazing. So that didn't happen in the first movie? I must have seen the trailer. I think she must do that in the trailer. Am I right?
I think so. But the funny thing is when that happens in the trailer, there was actually a lot of chatter on the interwebs that she was lassoing her invisible jet, which is something that is known and is something part of her history. And so,
well, let me talk about that invisible jet.
Okay.
So here's another one that just drove me crazy. So they decide that, so she works at the Smithsonian and they decide we have to get to Egypt. And the solution to do this is she goes to the Smithsonian and Chris Pine is the pilot, and he just hops in one of the airplanes at the Smithsonian and flies it to Egypt.
Wait, what? One of the decommissioned planes?
Yes.
Inside the Smithsonian.
I mean, it was outside the Smithsonian.
Allegedly decommissioned.
Like, obviously, I guess any plane at the Smithsonian is ready to fly at a moment's notice and doesn't need refueled for a flight to Egypt.
That seems highly unlikely. But so, are you telling me that the invisible jet doesn't even make a showing in the movie?
So then she's like, so I've been practicing this power where, like, you know, we could hide my homeland, and so I'm going to hide this plane. And she uses that power, and it hides this plane from the Smithsonian.
Oh, so essentially any jet could be
an invisible jet. But they talk some about radar, and I guess that makes it invisible to radar too. I don't know, but like there were just so many plot holes like that where you're like, I don't think that that's the way the world works, right?
I honestly assumed that they would, that she would have that. I mean, she's been around for a long time at this point. By the 80s, she could have amassed a large amount of money. I assumed that she had, you know, purchased a jet.
You would assume that something logical and that the follows the rules of how the world works had happened, right?
I mean, it's not like what I'm saying doesn't already exist in the Wonder Woman comics.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, that's an example of the type of stuff that happens.
I swear that here's the reason why a lot of older and why I feel like DC comics fail. It's because they take what they feel like, maybe these Hollywood execs feel like, are bombastic backstories that are written in comics, and they throw them out and then bring their own bombastic backstories that make no sense in. Like, if you're going to keep what is, like, if you're just, why throw away something?
I mean, you're right, because it's funny that, like, for me, the MCU's Guardians of the Galaxy is, like, the most shocking version of not throwing out the comic book bombasticness, right?
Right.
And, like, having it be like this ridiculous success. Like, it's so funny. So,
well, that's what makes the MCU successful in my mind, is that they...
Is that they just lean into the source material, basically?
Correct. They might take some of it and adjust it so that it looks a little bit better on screen, but they don't just whole hog throw the script out for the most part. I mean, they have in some situations. But for the most part, they're like, we're going to lean into these things that were part of the persona of these characters.
Right.
And it feels like all before the MCU came along, you know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, that sometimes they would just whole hog throw that crap out and make something up completely different and new. And this feels like the DC versions of these movies are the same way. They're like, you know what? We're just going to come up with a new origin story for all these characters, and we're going to do something completely different than what's been popular in the comics for them. You know, we don't want to retell the same story, I guess. I don't know what they're thinking.
And it feels like there's just all sorts of inconsistencies, things that don't make sense. And the thing that's kind of sad about it is that the movie starts out and you're kind of like, okay, you know, this is fun. It's a cool setting, et cetera. Although it is weird that, like, they're doing this 1984 movie and they don't really have, like, this kick-ass 1980s soundtrack, which seems like...
Oh, what? I thought right? that was the whole reason to do it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's...
I thought that was going to be a big part of it, though. I thought...
No, 0.0%.
Whoa, 0.0.
Like, they don't have a single 80s song in it?
I can't think of one.
I'm deeply stunned.
and again, you compare that to Guardians of the Galaxy and like the playlist that both of those movies had. I mean, it's completely different. So the last thing I have to say about it is it starts out and you're like, okay, I'm enjoying this good time, etc. And it just gets worse and worse and worse until like at the end, you're like, what is even going on here? I don't understand how they can... I don't understand. So,
I'm sorry that I find your suffering delightful. I'm sure that, I mean, I'm looking forward to my own version of the suffering, I guess, here at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's funny is that, like, everyone's going to watch it and have this same experience. And, like, I've talked with a lot of people online, and basically, at least among geeks, this is a fairly
consistent
opinion. So,
of kind I mean, of a meh, basically, right?
Yeah.
Basically, all the people I follow or talk to online, I'm seeing the same opinion across the board as well. There are very few positive reviews from geekdom coming out of this.
Tell me again, Jay, of the DC movies, which is your favorite?
My favorite is probably Birds of Prey.
Okay. I just realized there's a lot of the DCs I haven't even seen. Like, I basically turned off of them.
Are we?
We're not counting the Nolan ones, obviously.
Oh, well, then none. I thought we were including Nolan films here, because then we're like,
no.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Knight is amazing.
Yeah, that's true, because the Nolan films, they basically are a different... I mean, they really are a different universe, even, aren't they? Even cinematically?
Yeah, cinematically they are.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even pretend like Ben Affleck Batman is anywhere near Christian Bale Batman, right? Okay.
Yeah.
One final criticism of Wonder Woman, then I'll say something positive about HBO Max.
Okay.
So, like, it just feels like their CGI sucks. I don't understand why DC movies have crappy CGI. And maybe I'm too critical of it, I don't know. But, like, I felt like in the first one, when they're on their like secluded island, I thought the CGI of that island was not great. And did you guys feel the same way, or am I just being like too critical?
I don't think I noticed it, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, I don't remember what aspects of it were CGI enough to, it didn't stand out to me.
Mm. I mean, it starts off, the movie starts off with a flashback on that same island. And I was getting like, man, this island still looks like crap. But then there's other parts of the movie where I thought that the CGI was more egregious than that. So
generally, I'm pretty tolerant of that sort of stuff. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, you like 80s action movies, so.
Well,
it's so true.
I'm also, I mean, I don't know if I actually want to admit to this. I have a stage acting background in high school. I was in all of the dramas. So there's something of suspending disbelief and using just simple things to portray a story that I just don't care, as long as it's, you know, not over the top awful. Mm. Okay. You know, I can appreciate when what they're trying to do. Although I will admit I'd never seen Clash of the Titans until this weekend, and I started watching it, and I could not continue.
It's pretty old at this point.
Doesn't hold up so much, huh?
I mean, I don't have any ties to it. I'd never seen it before. So, and there were just some sections of it that I'm like, even for 1981, it was bad. Like I'm looking at it going, okay, that's pure bad. And this is 4 years post Star Wars. And I'm like, holy cow, that's awful. So, but there are some sections of it that are okay, but it was difficult. I didn't make it through. I turned it off.
So, one last thing on HBO Max. I'm assuming you two have not heard of a movie called Let Them All Talk.
No.
So it's another HBO Max exclusive movie, and it was made by Steven Soderbergh, and the main star in it is I'm having a mind blank. Meryl Streep. And it's I enjoyed the movie a lot. I don't know that I can, like, it has to be a certain type of person, I think, to enjoy it. It's about Meryl Streep plays this famous artist, author, who has to travel from New York to the United Kingdom to receive this lifetime literary award. She's a famous author, and she can't fly. And so she decides to take a passenger cruise on the Queen Anne 2.
Okay.
And basically the bulk of the movie is her on this ocean liner with, she invites to go along with her two old friends that she hasn't seen for like 25 years and her nephew. And the bulk of the movie is them on that cruise line and them getting to know each other again, having conflicts with each other, etc. And he shot it in 2 weeks. And it's, I enjoyed it quite a bit. But again, if that description doesn't sound like something that would be interesting to you, then it's probably not going to
catch you. I am not the target audience here, Jay.
You had me at Steven Soderbergh. You lost me at Meryl Streep. So,
oh my God, Trevor.
I was a Meryl Streep fan?
No, I mean, I guess it shouldn't surprise me that you don't like the best actor of our, like, probably ever.
Oh,
but
geez, no.
But here we are.
I will say that some of Steven Soderbergh's films are some of my favorite. Logan Lucky, I've watched a dozen times. I absolutely love that film.
I didn't like it that much. Maybe I need to watch it again. But
my favorite scene ever in any movie is in that movie. It's the scene with all of the inmates that are doing their riot, and they're demanding the newest Game of Thrones book, and he's out there telling them that it doesn't exist, it hasn't been written yet, and they're like, there's inmates that are coming in telling us stories about this, and he's like, I'm reading from the Wikipedia article, I'm telling you that it hasn't been made yet, they've just seen it on TV, and like, it is the most glorious scene ever. It just cracks me up every time. I could watch that scene on loop.
Okay, well, Trevor, you gave me a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the gift, and why did you think it would be a good something I would enjoy?
I love this. It's like the justify your choice.
Well, not exactly, but I don't think Trevor just like randomly, you know.
I did not randomly select something. I did make one error. And I'm going to admit to that right now. My first error was that we talked about my psychosis on previous episodes. I wanted Jay to be able to open something. I didn't want to just purchase it for him and as a download. So I know that he doesn't like that it's a cartridge and that he has to stick it in his Switch.
I don't mind that. It's more Brian who.
But
it's our only physical game for the Switch.
That
so far.
Is funny.
See, then you can just leave it in there. You can put it in and you never have to take it out.
There you go.
So what I purchased for Jay was the Banner Saga trilogy for the Switch. And the reason I purchased it on the Switch is because he already mentioned that he's unwilling to play games where he has to actually can't play it in bed. So I bought it on the Switch.
But he also says he's not a console gamer. I'm so confused by Jay.
That's fair.
But also, you have to remember that when I purchased this, I thought that there was a good chance that Jay wouldn't play it and then Brian would.
And that's fair, too.
Okay.
Okay, so part of this, I'm like, okay, well, if this flops,
like maybe
with Jay
will watch it, basically. Yeah.
I think that at least Brian will give it a shot. So anyway, I purchased the Banner Saga trilogy on Switch. Now, the Banner Saga is a turn-based, very story-driven RPG that has sort of a Viking-esque plot,
yeah,
I guess,
like
or background.
Vikings.
Yeah, fantasy Vikings, I guess. So, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, the fact is it's a turn-based, basically a strategy game, almost like Might and Magic when you're moving your units on the board during combats. And I think the story is really well done. I thought that honestly, the price was really good for what the amount of time and entertainment that it could provide. So anyway, I looked at it. I'm like, this is a Switch game that has a lot of playthrough. It is turn-based. It is a great RPG. From the parts that I've played, it's actually very well done. I have not played the newer version, the Banner Saga Part 3 or whatever. But and I actually haven't played through the others all the way. But from what I've played, it's a very enjoyable game. So that's where I came from.
Okay. Well, I am excited to give it a go. Brian just on like the holiday sale or something, he fell victim to Facebook advertising. And he saw that there is a Jurassic Park Ultimate Edition where it's basically an amusement park builder, except you're building Jurassic Park. And so he purchased that on the Switch, and I've been trying to I'm trying to do a computer game that's I'm actually playing it in bed, and we'll see how it goes. But I recently started playing, haven't gotten very far in it, but also talked Josh into playing some of it. A game that's been in my Steam library for quite a while that is called Tyranny.
You're playing this in bed. Man, you are going to have some trippy dreams, Jay.
Yeah, maybe. What have you thought of that game so far, Josh?
So I haven't gotten very far, but I really enjoyed like the character creation, and I made a comment on Discord that the game scored points for me because the initial combats were not me killing rats. So
right.
I mean, honestly, I haven't thought anything different than what made me initially purchase the game. I should put it that way. I mean, I bought it on a Steam sale probably years ago, and
right.
I like the setting is like kind of fascinating. This idea of like, you know, the great evil wins and you are, you know, basically working for the great evil, and you know, it just can
yeah. A quick pitch of the game basically is that first of all, it's from the people who made Pillars of the Earth. And it uses the same engine as Pillars of the Earth. And it is essentially, like Josh said, the great evil has conquered the world, and you are a cog in the machine that is his empire. And so,
Pillars of Eternity?
What's that?
No, Pillars of Eternity. It's a different world than Pillars of Eternity. Like
I said the wrong name of the game. It's not Pillars of the Earth. Sorry.
Sorry. Okay.
The engine is based on.
Yes. So it's an isometric RPG that you know will kind of remind you of the old Baldur's Gate games or stuff like that, right?
So I purchased this game based on the two of you having
starting it.
Starting it. haven't done anything. I haven't even started it up. All I did was I looked at the price and I'm like, it was $20 for the deluxe edition, which included like extra portraits and the soundtrack and everything, which I honestly didn't care about. But I'm like, why not? I mean, the difference between the normal and the combination was like, I think the normal one was like $12 or $14 and it was $20 for everything. I'm like, whatever.
Sure.
That's true, because I probably won't use any of the bonus stuff, but whatever. They probably deserve their money. So I'm going to give it a shot eventually. but it is currently languishing in Steam hell.
The thing that is kind of cool about character creation that Josh had mentioned you start off, it asks you like what career,
choose your adventure part.
Yeah, kind of. You say what career you wanted to have started off with, and it could have been like a diplomat or a war mage or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then it gives you like this story of, it's like, okay, so you're now being sent to be governor of this province, and you're given two things that you can, that are kind of you're told storyline wise two things that are happening that you can make a choice on, and it might be like, you know, this faction wants this thing in one storyline and the other one is, you know, et cetera, right? And so you'll pick one of those two and you'll make a decision, and you won't get to do the other one. It'll then take you to another two that you go through that probably six times, something like that. And supposedly the way that you make your decisions kind of shapes how the different factions view you in the world.
One of the things that I always loved about Twilight 2000 was character creation. Mm-hmm. And I wish they would do this more in RPGs of all types. In Twilight 2000, you would pick basically a career path for a period of time, like 2 years. So and this was for the pencil and paper game, but there was a long, long ago, there was a computer game version of this, but so let's say you pick your first career as college. Then you go to school for 2 years. It allows you to pick some skills based on a student's possible skill options, and then you could join the military. And part of Twilight 2000 is that some point during your career, the original war breaks out, and then you might continue in the military for a while, and you pick a career in the military, and you get skills based on those career. And you basically choose every 2 years or every 4 years, you were choosing a career path, a job, and those, the skills that you had at the end of character creation were based on those choices. And so your character, you're also building a backstory to your character almost. You know, my character, one of the options, honestly, right, your first career option could have been criminal. You know, and you can, in the pencil paper game, you made a role. And if you failed the role, your next career was jail time. And you learned skills from being in jail. And anyway, I think that there should be more games out there that let you take that path through and make choices about what your actual life is like, and that the game, when it starts, your choices you made should both shape your history and what skills you have.
Okay, well, Josh, to I guess wrap out the episode, you talk about we're at 47 minutes currently. why don't you talk about the gift that your family gave you?
Oh, all right. You don't want me to make Trevor justify his gift to me, which was the most used gift by my family over the Christmas holidays?
Hey, I'll justify it. I'm ready.
Okay, yeah, let's go. What did he give you?
I bought Josh Draftosaurus.
Oh, nice.
So I bought Draftosaurus because I felt like it was a game that he could play with his entire family, and it's a drafting game. I mean, what else? What more do I need to say?
I was like, Trevor basically recognizes that this game is my second favorite mechanic of all time.
It's not Technology Tree the game, but
right.
It's close.
Well,
which that's the best part is inevitably my family would be like, well, what's your favorite mechanic? And I'm like, a tech tree. And then they would look at me like, what is that?
I mean, I tried to keep it simple. I wanted something that I knew would be quick. That's something that his whole family could play. I'm trying to branch out. I mean, in previous years, I think I bought you guys stuff that, was just for you. And so I'm trying to branch out, make sure that I'm thinking about your significant others and your families. But anyway, I looked up drafting games and I'm like, this is a drafting game about dinosaurs that, rates highly. It got great reviews and, it's a drafting game. I mean, what else do I need to know?
Well, I will say, like, it's so easy to teach. I mean, it's really distilled, right? Like, and it's so easy to teach, and it plays quick enough. And basically, I think of, like, the three or four different times that I taught it, every time except for once, all the players were like, well, can we play again? You know, so it's like every time it ended up being two plays of the game because they're like, you know, they just connected with it and it was quick. So it was a great pick, honestly. I've had my eye on it, but I was really grateful you grabbed it. I was just amused, to be fair, that it got played.
It's very difficult to buy you a board game because the whole time I'm thinking, yeah, what are the chances he's already purchased this?
Hey, I'm pretty sure my Board Game Geek library is up to date and you can double check if I
own something. I'm more lazy than that.
Fair enough. Anyway, that was a great gift. Do we still have time? Do you want me to talk about my family's out of the park?
We can do that in the bonus episode. Also do the talk about the new Dune game that we've both played at this point.
Oh, that's right. You did play it. Yeah, let's talk about Dune real quick.
We're
going to talk about the bonus
episode. Oh, you're saying that's what we're talking about in the bonus episode.
I'd like to spend at least a little bit of time talking about Too Many Bones, more than just its production value.
Excellent.
But I think that there's some interesting things there that we can discuss.
Yes, they made some choices, that is for sure.
To cap out...
Oh, yeah, I've played it. Jordan has it, and so we've played it a couple times. Yeah.
Okay, well, to cap out this episode, I have both a Dank Dune meme combo with a dad joke.
Whoa. Okay.
And so this is a picture of Paul Atreides with his hand raised, looking solemn, from the 1980s Dune movie. And the caption says, "Life's boring, spice it up." stay tuned to our bonus episode for more awesome, exciting stuff. And sign up on Patreon.